You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for February 10th, 2017. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the White House Daily Spicer Humiliation at the Jeff Gannon Memorial Press Room, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. This week's exciting episode of The Adventures of the Cornfield Resistance is brought to you by MacGuffin's Muffins. MacGuffin's Muffins, building strong plot points 12 ways. And we'd also like to welcome a new sponsor, Dukakis Khakis. Dukakis Khakis. You might remember Mike Dukakis. He ran for president once, and he had a line of very sensible men's pants that was nearly ruined when George H.W. Bush slandered him so brutally in the press. But they survived, and now they sponsor our show, and they are Dukakis Khakis.
But that reminds me of Junior Dude this week. He wants Jimmy Carter to run for president again.
Yes, he does. Because one term.
Because he's only been president for one term. And I have to explain to him that his mother was a Kennedy 80 volunteer.
Right. So I'd hate to have to bust that. I hate to bust your thing out of retirement there and have to go after him again. Although, in Jimmy Carter's defense, none of the habitat homes he built have been destroyed by bankruptcy or fraud or
lawsuits.
Were built with China.
Yeah.
The lawsuits, I don't believe any of them were built with Chinese steel or illegal immigrants or workers that he screwed.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't declare bankruptcy over them to make money and shaft his shareholders. So you know what? Not the worst idea I've ever heard.
No.
Although I think looking backwards is kind of problematic generally for Democrats.
Yes.
Forward-looking.
Well, and let's face it, Jimmy Carter is a 90-something cancer survivor, so that's probably not the best choice.
Jimmy Carter is indestructible.
Clearly, like John McCain's mother,
right,
who turned 105 this week. Happy birthday, John McCain's mother.
Mm-hmm.
This is lots going on in the past. We look to the past every once in a while to avoid talking about the present.
Right.
that we're going to make it through this one week at a time, folks.
Sure.
And I want to say, too, that I am expecting this administration to last for I have no expectations 1 week to the next about anything. But
yes,
I am acting as if we have a 4-year term of the president.
I think that is a sensible strategy.
Yeah. I know that every week he proves to us that he is conducting himself as if he is made of steel and unimpeachable, and then he commits impeachable acts, and everyone just moves on to the next outrage or drama or tweet or whatever. But I'm just expecting that I am acting as if this is just going to go on. Because if I try to live in some sort of alternate future, or try to live on hope for a better thing than what we have to deal with right now, I'm distracting myself.
Right.
And there are tasks at hand that have to be committed to.
Like the sandwich you were supposed to get me. Again, thanks, Trump.
Now she just puts on her pussy hat and goes marching.
Right.
Where's my sandwich?
I'm sitting here with, cold coffee and no sandwich going... A bar. There's several bars full of Republican men in Springfield wondering where their wives are.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's got this women's group she meets with. I don't know. Yeah, they're planning on killing you in your sleep.
That's what they're planning on doing. That's absolutely true.
We owe an enormous debt of gratitude. Let's segue to Coretta Scott King.
Yeah, yeah.
We owe an enormous, all of us, all human beings on Earth, all people in this country owe an enormous debt of gratitude that we can never repay to the civil rights movement and the warriors in that movement who were incredibly patient and persistent and confident in the long range goals that they had set for themselves and who had one setback after another. So far, I haven't been fire hosed by anybody.
So far,
my children haven't been threatened. So far, no one's burned a cross on my lawn or taken my job away. Although, you know, there's, you know, I'm not saying what the future holds, but.
And the extent to which black people in this country are entitled to riot.
Yes.
Is.
Yes. Right. Let's put it this way. Rise up in armed insurrection.
Right.
For really good reasons. A thousandfold. And I want to be as cognizant as possible that
of our privilege.
Of our privilege those who've gone before me endured so much worse.
Yep.
And had so much of a more expansive view and a positive view. They held on to it for so long, and they passed it down like to generation to generation. That it's a good thing to scrape the iPhone and the detritus of modern life, the trivia of modern life, off of that plaque every now and then and read what it says. And take our example from them. And I'm not putting myself in the same category at all. I don't know what I would have done if I were in the civil rights movement. I would have cried like a baby. I would have pissed myself if I had to go through. And I hope eventually, after having gone through panic attacks and fear with people at my elbow who were on the same page, I would have done what they did.
Yep.
I like to think of that.
Pull myself together and get back up again and fight and march and hold people to the standard which they say they believe in.
And those were goddamn Americans. Those were patriots. Those were the people that Edward R. Murrow said we're not born of, I'm misquoting him now, frightful men or frightened men, fearful men. We're not born of fearful people.
Yep.
Those people had every reason to be afraid and everything to lose. And they fought and they fought and they fought because it was the right thing to do. It was the only thing to do. You know, what Victor Laszlo says in Casablanca. Why do you keep fighting? He's asked. Well, why do you keep breathing?
If you're
fighting, you die. If you stop breathing, you die. This is what you have to do. But it for all the shit that came down and has come down, and the fact that the Republicans have now elected back to back the two worst presidents in modern American history.
Yeah.
On purpose, eyes open, cheerfully. And that the reason that Donald Trump is not being impeached right now is not because he's not a criminal, because he is. It's not because he's not corrupt, because he is. It's not because he hasn't violated the Constitution every fucking day. And it has been just horrendous as a human being. It's because the Republican Party is completely corrupt from top to bottom. There's not one fucking salvageable human being left in that shithole of a party.
Yep.
That's something new. But you know what? If you were living in the segregated South, you didn't have a lot to look to your government for in terms of hope.
Right.
They were against you. They were openly against you, and they would inflict violence upon you for mouthing off at them. So I'm not saying that there's anything we can draw from them other than courage, respect for the duration of the struggle, and confidence in the long-term future. And the fact that this is a massive setback.
Yep.
And there's going to be a lot of shit to clean up once this fucked up Republican Party is finally nailed into a box and sent into the unquiet grave where it belongs. Because the Party of Lincoln is dead, baby.
Yeah. And look, guys, this may not happen in our lifetime.
No.
I don't know. You know, the forces of fascism don't die easily. And so I have been inspired this week because one of the children is studying World War II. And middle child is studying the Holocaust in history. And they have had to watch a one-hour documentary about the Holocaust. And she said to me this morning, I don't know. I know why we're doing this. I know we have to learn about the Holocaust, but Mom, we are watching a movie that is 1 hour of starving people shoveling the bodies of other people who are dead. That's what it is. And some of it has no voiceover. It's just silent.
It's just film.
It's just film. And I talked to her about Donald Trump's proclamation for Holocaust Remembrance Day, not mentioning the Jews. And, you know, she said, well, you know, to be fair, it is true that other people were killed by the Nazis, but the purpose of the Nazis really was to eliminate the Jews. And I said, the purpose of the Nazis was to make Germany great again by eliminating the Jews. She just got it. All of a sudden it was, like Muslims and Mexicans. I said, you know, this is what it's about. And make that connection. So this has gone on before. And, you know, all the talk about whether Martin Luther King's bust is in the Oval Office and Winston Churchill's bust is in the Oval Office. I have been thinking about Winston Churchill this week because because the times I've been to the bunker where he was during the war, you know, the offices that were underneath, underground.
Right, the command center.
Which is one of the first places you go if you go to England, because it's open late. And you get there late and you do that one thing and then you go to bed and sleep for 11 hours. There were days during the war when Winston Churchill didn't want to get out of bed because things were going so badly.
As I said, that's what the liquor was for.
Yeah, you said that's what the liquor was for.
That's right.
Get Winston out of bed. You can get out of bed. Uh-huh. If you get out of bed, Winston, you can have a drink.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, he said things like, if you're going through hell, keep going.
Right.
And success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. Right.
Well, and I'm an optimist because there's no point in being anything else.
Right. You have enemies, good. That means you've stood up for something.
Right.
Sometime in your life, you've stood up for something. And so, and my favorite, of course, and I'm sure it's one of your favorites too, history will be kind to me, for I intend to write it.
Yes.
And so he had that vision of, you know, we're going to get through this, and I will be there to record what really happened. And that's what we have to do.
Well, and my favorite quote, there's a lot of quotes about Churchill. I don't want to make this the Churchill show, about what numbers are versus political numbers. And he was a very shrewd politician. He knew his stuff. But the idea that my favorite quote about Churchill is that he marshaled the English language to save Western civilization, or words to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And Churchill did a lot. You know, you can say this about every historical character. Let's just say now you can stipulate that Barack Obama made mistakes and Abraham Lincoln made mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And Winston Churchill made mistakes, because I don't believe in pristine heroes anywhere outside of comic books.
Right.
All right. So stipulated, you know, as little
human
child
beings.
Pointed out.
Human
you know,
beings. Yep.
As middle child pointed out, and as junior dude has pointed out, you know, so-and-so was racist back when Lincoln was president.
Right.
Like, dude, everybody was a racist when Lincoln. Lincoln was a racist.
Yes, he was.
Unless you were a pure abolitionist, which was a rare thing, you were a fucking racist because you grew up in it. But that's not the point. The point is, Winston Churchill knew the power of words.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that when you have nothing else, you can inspire people with words and a vision. And that, you know, he says something like, small words are the best. Small words are good and old words are the best.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And just keep and keep hitting things. Keep whacking people with language. This is something I was talking with a person earlier today on a completely different subject. But this is where liberals and Democrats largely fail.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how to tell a fucking story.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a lot of us do, but we don't have access to a national microphone. But there's this weird disconnect between the policies we have and the language we use.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that we haven't learned from our opponents yet. We haven't learned you have to keep it very simple. You have to keep it very clear. You need to tell people a very clear black and white story when you're talking to people in 30 and 60 second blurbs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm feeling a little bit, speaking of alcoholics, like Lincoln and Ulysses Grant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say Lincoln went through 12 generals before he found Grant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have all, I mean, Lincoln had all the infrastructure of the North. He had all the people he needed. He had everything he needed to win the Civil War, except people who knew how to fight.
Yep.
And people who knew how to organize an army and lead an army and win battles. And he had to go through a whole lot of really crappy generals to find the people who would fight for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he found two people, one of whom just – Grant was Mr. Never Give Up, and Sherman, who realized, mm-hmm. to defeat the South, we're going to have to kill them all.
Yeah,
we're going to have to destroy their armies.
Salt the earth. Yeah, it's going
to
be
we have
fight
to, stop.
To the death. Yeah.
We have to destroy their capacity to make war, and that means burning their fields,
mm-hmm.
destroying their crops. And it was I think Phil Sheridan who bragged that the Shenandoah Valley had been so stripped that a crow flying overhead would have to carry its own lunch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was not a vision of war that the vast number of people who were fighting it could comprehend.
Right.
That they
right.
didn't understand what they had just gotten themselves into.
Mm-hmm.
And that the only way out was going to be really, really brutal. I'm hoping that we settle our differences as a country without open warfare. I'm confident we can. But I don't think Democrats, leaders in my party, have quite yet wrapped their heads around what it's going to take to reverse this, because I don't think they quite comprehend what the problem really is, the scope
right.
of the problem.
Right.
And you and I have had this conversation before, which is once you figure out that whatever your objections are to the Democratic Party, the Republican Party is insane.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
rotten and corrupt. And they are aided and abetted in their destruction of this country by people in the media who are absolutely unfit to be there. And they are colluding to wreck this country. And they're doing it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Once you sort of cross that Rubicon, there's a whole different universe of moral and ethical decisions you enter into.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, oh, okay, this is not, you can't be lazy anymore. You
right.
can't pretend this isn't happening anymore.
Right.
You can't both side or it away anymore. And I think that's what a lot of people on the fence are afraid of, because on some level they realize that if they ever have to face the monster that the Republican Party has become, they will either have to become a fascist and collaborate, which is what mm-hmm. that means,
mm-hmm.
or they'll have to fight it with everything they've got.
Right. And lose their sense of leisure.
Right.
And lose their sense of being free of it.
Ever. Above it. Above it.
Or above it.
That whole
above
messy
it or outside of it. Right.
Right.
And someone on Twitter said to me today, I said something to the effect of, I hope all the people that voted against Hillary because she brought too much drama to the White House are happy now, right? Mm-hmm. And I assume this person was a teacher of some kind, because they said, my precious little millennials are really upset that everything's about politics now. Yeah, because all of a sudden we're at war.
Yeah.
Because we have given all of the power to the bad guys.
Right.
And so that's the problem. But this segues very well into a discussion of what happened to Elizabeth Warren this week.
Yes.
Because to me, the way we fight this battle, and you've heard this from us before, folks, mm-hmm. and we're going to keep going back to it, is you fight this war by starting with your values.
That's right.
The very best sign I've seen all year, and there's been so many of them, was... and I'm not quoting it exactly, but it was, look here, we are the moral majority.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, and it was at the immigration fight, you know, and at an airport where someone is saying, look, we're the moral majority. We're the ones who are fighting for patriotism, the rights of human beings in this country who are here looking for our protection, which is an American ideal, harboring the innocent victims of war is an American ideal, and equality. You know, these are all values that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not fighting, I mean, you don't have to say we're fighting Republicans. We are fighting for something. This goes back to the Civil Rights Movement again. Martin Luther King kept going back to the constitutional rights of citizens of this country and saying, Black people deserve these rights because we are citizens of this country. And why aren't you endorsing the Constitution of the United States that you uphold as sacred?
Right.
So to my mind, this what happened to Elizabeth Warren in her being silenced for speaking the words of Coretta Scott King on the floor of the Senate, it went against her rights as a senator. It went against her rights as a woman. It went again, and by the way, men stood up and read from that letter afterwards with no objection. Now, apparently, at least some of the men avoided the line in the letter that had triggered McConnell,
mm-hmm.
You know, where basically Sessions is called a racist. And so we can argue that point. But she was singled out. There's no question that she was singled out.
Right.
And Mitch McConnell, who is just soulless, as far as I'm concerned, has nothing to lose, apparently. He's
right.
not worried about the next election. He's not worried about losing the White House. He's not worried about losing his soul. He's not worried about anything. Because the only... And I credit him for keeping his eyes on his prize, which, as you have said many times, is to please 41% of the American people who want him to silence that bitch, right? Mm-hmm. Who want him to silence Pocahontas, who want whatever they're calling her today. That's a good thing.
Right.
And you talked in the beginning of this podcast about fighting the Republican Party. The Republican Party doesn't stand for anything
mm-hmm.
but tax cuts for rich people and special privileges for the wealthy. That they stand for that, and they stand for make liberals mad, and that's it.
Right. And let me just point out, I just did a quick look up while you were saying that.
Mm-hmm.
The year was 1993. You know, back in the good old days that Matthew Dowd and David Brooks and Michael Gerson and all the both-siderous scum of this country wish we could just get back to the civilized days when we were all polite to each other and we weren't mean. When Jesse Helms famously said that he's going to make her cry, I'm going to sing Dixie until she cries.
Right.
He was talking about Carol Moseley Brown, the first, mm-hmm. the only black member of the Senate and the first female black member of the Senate. And Jesse Helms felt perfectly free and within mm-hmm. his rights as a mm-hmm. senator and a white supremacist and mm-hmm. a member of the Republican Party who was racist even back then to say shit like that, because fuck you, what are you going to do?
Right.
I come from the state full of, you know, a basement dwelling sister fucking morons who will keep electing a racist asshole like me. I'm not going anywhere. You mm-hmm. can't budge me.
And that's the real crime here is not just that Jeff Sessions is now our attorney general, but that Jeff Sessions was reelected time and time again by the voters of Alabama.
Yes. Because the voters of Alabama, I hate to say this because my wife is from there.
All my children were born in Alabama. Yes.
And you got them the hell out of there. Are bad people.
Yeah, they are.
They're bad people. I know they wish you to have a blessed day and they wanted you to know that Jesus approves of the checking account you just opened at your bank.
Right.
And that's great. But if you looked at Jeff Sessions in the eye all these years and voted for him, you're a really bad person.
Yes.
And I'd like to point out that, I'll bring this up in a little bit.
And by the way, my ex-husband was, during the course of our marriage, president of the ACLU of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And he said many times that if you put civil rights to a vote in Alabama, it wouldn't pass.
Right.
Rights are not voted on, folks.
That's right.
And that is really important to remember. And that is something that we're going to have to continue to fight for. The claim is that because Trump won, our rights are somehow at risk. And it is going to be up to us in court over and over again. And thank you to everyone who's contributed to the ACLU in the past 3 months. They've had a very good season. Junior Dude's first check from his checking account was to the ACLU.
Yeah.
Yep. He'll be bragging about that on the campaign trail.
Yes, he will.
Thank you for donating to the ACLU, but we're going to have to sue.
Yeah.
And I think Donald Trump is not aware, even now, that the Congress or the courts can stop him from doing anything.
Yeah, the Congress won't do it.
Because Congress won't do it. But
right, the Congress won't do it.
This court situation of him dissing judges over and over again. I think as a reaction to, they can't really do this to me, and I'm going to smack them around on Twitter until they stop it.
Right.
And I just really don't think he has a concept that being sued as president is any different from being sued as a real estate developer. That's fine. I have all the lawyers in the world, and I'll just wait them out. And they'll run out of money, and I'll just win. Because of this, you know, osmosis of money will flow to me and I win anyway because I didn't pay them and the settlement won't be as much and they'll settle out of court. And
right.
That's how I make my money.
Well, this is the same, you know, idiot who thought we could renegotiate America's debt.
Right.
You know, declare bankruptcy.
Right, right.
And then bankruptcy court say, hey, Mr. Bankruptcy Court man, how about America will pay, you know, 70 cents on the dollar? Like, that's the scam you ran as a real estate vulture and scumbag grifter in the private sector. Because we allow people to do that because freedom and free markets and capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody explained to him that that's not how the global reserve currency works
mm-hmm.
and how the economy works. And his only contact, this is what's, you know, and everyone knows someone like this, except on a much smaller scale. You know, the people who only talk about baseball, you know, that reminds me of that time the pitcher did thus and so. Or whose worldview and experience is so narrow, they can only analogize everything in the world to their interest in, well, let's say science fiction, because I do with this all the time.
Yeah.
He only understands the world in terms of how to con people out of their money and how to cheat at real estate and TV shows. And so everything is that thing. Everything is either a real estate scam where you can negotiate, we can cut another deal, and I'll fuck you up and scare you, and I'll be really unpredictable and wild, and I'll get a better deal that way, or I'll flood you with lawyers, or TV shows. And there are two skills that are uniquely unsuited to governing a democracy, and that would be real estate con artist and TV pitchman. And here's the thing. We all knew this.
Yeah.
Everyone on the left was setting our hair on fire. You know, whatever our differences are, we can't let this guy take over because all these things are going to happen. This is what's so boring about this. This is why this is a rerun. This is why your show is going to fail, Donald, because it's a fucking rerun.
Right, right.
We're rerunning the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
And we're rerunning the run-up to the Bush administration. A little blast from the past again, Blue Gal, if I may?
Absolutely.
The year was 2007. George W. Bush was president. And a guy named Newton Leroy Gingrich was on television on a show called This Week. All of these things are still true. Newt Gingrich is still on television. George Stephanopoulos still has the show a decade later. But I was going through my archives because I was looking for a graphic and happened across this exchange, which is much longer than I want to get into now. But there is an exchange from the Sunday Show's April of 2007 in which George Stephanopoulos says, "You have said before, Newt Gingrich, after Columbine, you gave a speech where you blamed the shootings on 35 years of liberalism. Do you still stand by that?" And Gingrich says, "Yeah, of course I do. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's all liberals' fault. Liberals' fault. Columbine and shootings in this country are because liberals, period. It's their fault. The mass shootings in this country are the fault of liberals." Because you can either be a pimp or a prostitute in a Halloween costume and you can buy a costume. We don't have any discussion of what that's going on. But we try to restrict free political speech under McCain-Feingold. Obviously, situational ethics, liberals, mass shootings, QED. Now, this is the ravings of a soulless madman. 10 years later, he's still welcome on the Sunday shows. 10 years later, this demonstrably evil person is welcome on the same fucking show where George Stephanopoulos has given up all pretense of being a journalist and now just is a Republican ball washer. That's all he does. And so this idea that there is that we don't know what's coming, we're not sure what these people are like, we should wait for the pivot. We've watched these people operate. We've watched them back when it was Jesse Helms and Carol Moseley Braun. We watched them back when it was impeaching Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. We watched them back when Newt Gingrich shut the government down because he was throwing a tantrum. The problem we are facing, this is the hurdle we have to get people over. The whole Republican Party has to go.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Root and branch. And the way you do that, I'm convinced of this because I've seen them do it to us. You talk about them in simple, blunt, clear language.
Mm-hmm.
Do what Newt Gingrich taught his Republicans to do.
Right.
Whenever you're in front of a microphone, you point out the fact, well, of course, the problem with if you ever get into a town hall meeting, which is doubtful, with your representative, well, of course, the problem is that your entire party are traitors and liars.
Right. I think sometimes that comes across as ad hominem.
Right.
And I don't think people are smart enough to realize that, are smart enough to connect that to an actual Republican crime.
And
they're going to think that you're just lying.
And here's the thing. You're right about that, because at a town hall meeting, you would say, dear Representative Davis, let's say it's Rodney Davis.
Yeah, our congressman who will not have a town hall meeting because of people like you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your president has lied every day of his administration so far.
Yep.
He's lied about this. He's lied about that. He's lied about – he's a pathological liar. What are you going to do to keep the pathological liar who runs your party and who you supported and who you voted for, who you raised funds for? What responsibility are you taking for keeping this very dangerous – lunatic in check?
I'm not going to critique what you just said.
Now,
I'm going to say this.
Uh-huh.
Why are you voting to take away our health care when you have health care for you and your family for life? paid for by us, the taxpayer.
Would you like me to be Rodney Davis for a second?
Why are you... No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
Why are you allowing tax cuts for Exxon when the taxes that I pay, my sales taxes don't go down. My sales taxes don't go down when I buy a car, when I buy a soda, when I buy anything. You know, why do I pay Social Security taxes 12 months out of the year and Joe Scarborough pays it for one paycheck?
Right.
You know, if you make it about economic fairness.
Sure.
And don't bring up people who are, don't bring up divisions between middle class and working class people. Don't make it about that. Make it us and them, and you are on their side. You are on the side of the banksters. Look, you're letting the banksters have the banking system again. You have supported a president who's got Goldman Sachs in the White House again.
Sure.
I thought we voted against that. I thought he was going to clean the swamp.
I agree with you. I think we're talking about two different things.
Okay. Well, I'm talking about keeping it really simple.
Yes.
Particularly because I think you're right. I think that the Republican Party has gotten really good at keeping things really simple, and particularly with the abortion issue the way it is, and people have become absolutely rage blinded by that one issue to the point where they will never vote Democrat. And I say that specifically because Democrat kills babies.
Right.
And that's end of story. And never mind that George W. Bush killed lots of Iraqi babies and,
tax dollars go to Israel that provides
abortion on demand to soldiers. Yes, absolutely. So, absolutely. So,
here's where I think you and I are talking a little bit past each other.
Okay.
I agree. I chose a bad example at a town hall meeting. You're probably right. I wouldn't say, why do you do this and why do you do that? Cause he'll just lie.
Right.
You know, why are you voting? Why are you going to take? Oh, I'm not. Obamacare is a disaster.
Yeah, open-ended questions like that are not.
Obamacare is a disaster. It's ruined everyone's life. We're going to solve that problem, and I have a plan. I'm working on a plan. I got a plan going. Mm-hmm. Shorter and quicker would be. You've had 6 years to sit, and you've had 6 years, and you've done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You've done nothing.
Paying your salary?
You've given us, you know, 72 votes to repeal. And a bunch of crappy hearings that went nowhere. There were witch hunts and so forth. You've done that. You have 6 years to prepare to get ready for this. What's the fucking plan, Rodney? Mm-hmm. What's the plan? I kind of think you don't have one. I kind of think you lied to the voters to get your job and keep your job. I kind of think you never thought you'd have to have a plan.
Right.
That's a good strategy for a town hall meeting. Simple, direct questions. Give me your plan or admit you're a liar. Period. Mm-hmm. But I gotta say that the reason Newt Gingrich gets to go on This Week and say liberals caused Columbine is because he convinced everyone in the Republican Party 25 years ago that every time they're in front of a microphone, say liberals are cowards, liberals are liars, liberals are monsters, liberals are traitors. Say it over and over again. Don't ever stop. Just keep repeating it over and over again. Every time you're talking, bend the conversation to what monsters Democrats are, what monsters liberals are. Every time you're on a radio show, and do this inside the government, while at the same time, outside the government, our friends Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity will be doing exactly the same
thing. Right.
And just keep pounding. So the message for a town hall meeting, I agree with you, it should be policy centered.
Mm-hmm.
But the message for broad public discussion of what do you think of the Republican Party? Oh, Republicans are monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans are traitors. Republicans are seditious assholes. Republicans want to kill this country. Republicans hate democracy. Republicans are cowards.
Republicans are not patriots.
No, they're not.
And they really do want to destroy what has made this country.
And they're not Christians.
Definitely not Christians. Yes.
If you got hundreds of elected officials, which I'm not saying is going to happen, I doubt it ever will. But if you got enough people agreeing that every time they're in front of a microphone, you know, whatever the subject is. And by the way, because you notice the conservatives do this all the time, all the time. There's always that. I called your radio show to talk about toasts. I don't want to get into the whole thing about how Hillary's a monster, lesbian, evil beast. But let's just leave that aside for a moment. Let's talk about screwheads.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They They're always closing.
But then you have to push back against that like Ryan Lizza did.
Yes, you do. Yes, you know,
and she tried that. That woman on Sunday afternoon.
She did.
Tried to do the, liberals don't care about morality, but that wasn't what I was going to say. I was going to talk about Putin.
Exactly.
And she said, no, you're not.
No,
we're
going
to talk about Putin. We're going to talk about how you just lied about me. Well, I'm not talking about you. Yeah, you are.
But if you are.
Yeah.
If you are an ordinary run-of-the-mill active liberal and you are have access to a microphone or a pen or whatever, stop trying to sell people on policy prescriptions in 140 characters. That's what you basically have. Remember, here's a list of words you need to use when describing the Republican Party. Use them all the time. Keep saying it over and over again. Now, we have a much smaller platform than they do. They have all the money in the world. They bought themselves an entire television industry. They bought themselves a church and satellites. They have all this
communication. But they also bought themselves Donald Trump.
Yes, they did.
And he's doing everything right out in the open, and they have to sit there and pretend like he's okay.
Oh, yeah, because Republicans are racist.
Yes, exactly. They're bigots. They're bigots.
You're either bigots or you're too stupid to see the bigotry of your party. Which is it? Those are your two choices. Yep. Next caller. And all I'm suggesting is, I'm not suggesting this as how you construct public policy, but we will never get to the place to construct public policy until we start taking them on directly.
Yep.
And the way you take them on directly is by using their strategies against them. And what we have on our side is we're actually right.
We're actually talking about stuff that they do and can point to it and say, by the way, you know, Trump being a birther for 5 years
really
is an issue.
Yeah.
That means he's a bigot.
Yeah. The things that you're mad about, and we've said this before, the things that you're mad about are shit you made up.
Yep. Yep.
And the things that we're mad about are things you actually
Donald
did.
Trump did this morning.
So let's not, and I know that you want to argue about font size, Matthew Dowd.
Yeah.
You know, well, you're both arguing at 120 decibels. Therefore, you're both equally wrong. No. They're saying things that are flatly, completely, ridiculously, viciously racist, untrue. And we're saying, isn't it a shame how that party over there keeps saying these lying things? And those things are not the same. Those are, in fact, the exact opposite, which is why the first place you deliver your payload is on the center. The center, I hate to say this, has to become uninhabitable.
You
have to make people who want this to be both sides. Let's all get along. Party over country over party. You have to make their lives a misery. You have to make them choose a side.
We're going to switch gears now and talk about somebody that's changed a side.
Oh, let's go.
Advertisers and marketers have changed sides.
Yes, they have.
There is no middle ground during the Super Bowl ads.
Nope.
There's no middle ground with Nordstrom now.
Nope.
And there's no middle ground, believe it or not, on Wall Street. I'm very surprised by that.
Huh?
But there is no middle ground on Wall Street when Donald Trump tweets about a company in order to drop its stock price. Wall Street is ignoring that because it's fake news. I hate to use that term, but they know that he's a lying scumbag. And they're not going to allow their investment. And this is when this is another way I know we are going to win this battle eventually.
Uh-huh.
I knew in my heart back in 1994, I said, oh, my God, there it is. There is the dove landing on Noah's boat.
Yeah.
Showing that there is. He comes back with that olive branch in his beak.
Huh?
1994, I saw an ad for American Airlines, and they had a gay tourist division.
Oh, my.
Where, an 800 number and hotel opportunities and travel and so forth. And I went, oh, my goodness. The rainbow flag is there because their favorite color is green.
Yeah, the money has moved.
The money and the disposable income is there for them to warrant this. And I actually went back and researched that for a post this week and found out that for American Airlines, who was really at the forefront of this, I think it was 1993, they made a $300,000 investment in this little thing, this little side thing of we will advertise in independent gay newspapers and gay magazines and, you know, underground newspapers that we have this opportunity, you know, this place where you can go and find your travel arrangements for what you want to do. And for $300,000 over the course of the next 5 years, they netted over $2 million. Mm-hmm. And, you know, other companies noticed that. And what companies are noticing this year is that that anti-Trump dollar is a good dollar.
Yeah.
They looked at the Pussy Hat March and they saw consumers.
Oh. All those ladies.
Look at all that pink yarn that got sold.
Oh, my God.
The shelves were empty of pink yarn because it's something that people want. The resistance is something that is polling really well.
Right.
And it's, I hate to say it, because that's not what I'm about as a political activist, but it is something that is fashionable to the young people.
It has reached the middle class.
And it has reached the middle class. It's reached the teenagers. It's reached Black Lives Matter and the resistance, both have reached an audience that is interested in putting their money. Look at, we just talked about it, ACLU.
Right.
Raised, you know, 6 years worth of money.
Mm-hmm. A day.
When people spend, in a weekend, yeah. When people spend their dollars a certain way, and you think Wall Street and marketing people don't notice that?
Uh-huh.
And I said in my post about, this was about the Super Bowl ads, that, you know, are they all of a sudden discovering their souls, or are they just marketing to us? And the answer that I had was, well, let's go back and look at Bill Hicks and see what he has to say about that.
Yeah.
You know, marketing
Absolutely.
People, just go kill yourselves, right? And that, you know, that anti-consumer dollar, that's a good dollar. You know, he's going for that minimalist dollar.
Uh-huh.
But How many copies of that, you know, Magic Art of Tidying Up? Everybody goes out and buys that book on how to throw away all your stuff, but you've still got that book in your house, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, and advertising is a good barometer of where people who only care about profit believe culture.
Yep. And go ahead.
Oh, and no, in the 19th, I agree with you. Harlan Ellison used to write columns. This is not science fiction, but you should drink anyway. called Glass Teat. Mm-hmm. It was a column of TV reviews. He wrote for the LA Free Press, I believe. And I have both of his volumes here. But he said when people started noticing black children showing up in commercials, they knew something had changed.
Right.
A very large tectonic. And it was a small kid having a Coke. That's all it really was.
Right.
But it was a tectonic change. And it wasn't that advertising creates culture. It was advertising closely follows trends.
Trends and where people are in their brains. Yep.
And when you can have a Super Bowl full of commercials about immigration and equal rights and loving who you want, something is in the air that is clear enough and sharp enough and measurable enough and monetizable enough that people who spend money will spend money on it.
And what we have to do is point out that what that is patriotism.
Yes.
What that is loving what America stands for.
Yes.
And so Lady Gaga stands up and sings, "This land is your land," with an American flag made out of drones in the sky.
Right.
And she's not being political. She's being patriotic.
Well, that's
right?
the thing. That's the thing. It's this is what patriotism looks like. It looks like a million women in pink hats.
Right.
Marching
loving their country and loving what it stands for. And what it stands for is helping a refugee child come to this country and become a success and contribute to what our country is.
And to keep that vision moving forward, every now and then you have to take the trash out.
Yep.
Every now and then you have to go, oh, shit, the fascist, the weed in the garden has grown so big that it threatens to kill the garden.
Right.
Now we got to roll our fucking sleeves up and remind people, this is what your fathers and grandfathers and mothers and grandmothers fought and died to stop. Mm-hmm. And now you're embracing it. And then you have to relearn the whole thing about why they don't remember anything.
Yep.
The average conservative has no long-term memory at all. Why they believe the silly shit they believe. And you can trace it. And you can go, because they've been listening to this shit for 25 years. Because nobody, no serious person in advertising, in media, in politics, you know, among the good guys, took us seriously when we said, you need to take this seriously.
Yeah.
When Rush Limbaugh first came on the air and started, you know, lying and spreading racism and talking about feminazis, when Newt Gingrich and he took over the party 25 years ago, and people like us were firing off every flare we could think of, going, this is going to end very badly.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, well, let's all be nice. Let's all be polite. And that's why discussions get really weird, because those of us who remember that we've tried to be nice, we had an era of compromise. We had a Democratic president who gave them peace, prosperity, budget surpluses, and about 60-70% of everything they wanted. And in return, they gave him witch hunts, slander, impeachment, and government shutdowns. That was not 2 years ago. That was 20 years ago.
They've
only gotten worse. So this is it's to Republicans to cut their base voters' memory off at last week.
Mm-hmm.
That nothing that happened before last week is admissible in evidence.
Yep.
And this is why liberals' greatest weapon is language and memory.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and why when I start to talk about the Nordstrom decision, I don't go to MSNBC. I go to CNBC. And I start listening to the stock market analysts and what they have to say about it. Mm-hmm. And it isn't political. We're not going to get into the politics of it. We're just going to talk about Nordstrom and what Donald Trump did today when he tweeted about Nordstrom.
Yeah.
And what happened is, well, Nordstrom went down a little bit, went 0.5% for 10 minutes, and then it jumped back up again because the president isn't part of the equation for Nordstrom. What is the part of the equation for Nordstrom? It's wise buying decisions on the part of their buyers who know that right now they have to replace Ivanka with something fresher and newer and better.
Right.
And Ivanka's not selling. And why is Ivanka not selling? They don't get into that.
No.
But we know that why Ivanka's not selling is because, number one, her clothes are crap and her clothes are made in Asia and her clothes are knockoffs of other designers. Number two, there's a boycott of Nordstrom because they're carrying her clothes and people don't like the fact. Now, this is and this is the grab your wallet. People have been really clear about this. That Ivanka Trump has a right to own a business as a woman,
sure.
A right to express herself as a working woman or as a working mother. This is not about diminishing her ability to earn money.
Right to earn
this
money.
This is about how she behaved and the choices she made after the grabbing pussy video came out.
Right.
Which is, at that point, you had a choice, Ivanka Trump. You and your rich husband could be in New York and say, Daddy, I'm not going to be a campaigner for you anymore.
Right. I can't.
I can't. You know, this is, I don't think you want to be president anyway, and that's fine. I'm going back to my kids and my business, and I'm going to run my business. And, you know, no one would have had a problem with that. But she continued to campaign and stand up for him after that.
That's right.
And that was a bridge too far. And that's when the boycott happened. So Nordstrom is making nothing but business decisions, just like Anheuser-Busch,
just like 84
Lumber.
I thought you all loved capitalism. I thought you all loved business and free decision-making.
Well, and the people, it's hilarious to me, the people that say they're boycotting Nordstrom,
mm-hmm.
I don't think Nordstrom's going to feel that all that much.
Huh.
And I'm not a Nordstrom shopper, so I'm not going to change my not buying clothes this year habit because I'm just not interested in that lifestyle. But look, these companies are not doing this out of the goodness of their hearts.
No.
They're doing it because this brand of patriotism sells
and
is selling. And that, as I said, I knew that gay marriage was on its way, that acceptance of the gay lifestyle as equal within the American picture
mm-hmm.
was going to happen because American Airlines made money from this.
Uh-huh.
And that sounds cold and calculating, but it's simply that marketers are good at predicting where consumers, and we're all consumers, whether we like it or not,
uh-huh.
where the trend is going, where the trend of thought is going.
Do you want to talk a little bit about Shakespeare and Junior?
I do, because we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Junior Dude is doing a project, a Shakespeare project, for his wonderful English teacher. She's just so great. They're allowed to do pretty much whatever they want. And Donald Trump is a real gift to Junior Dude, because everything is about politics these days, and that's all he wants to talk about. Right. So he gets to do a Shakespeare project, and he's doing Macbeth and Trump.
Yeah.
And they are reading Macbeth right now, and that it is a Macbeth project. So doing Trump is easy, but we went and did a Google search on Macbeth and Trump, and it's something like 30,000 hits because everyone has compared Donald Trump to Macbeth in the past year. And it's interesting that Steve Bannon is most often mentioned as Lady Macbeth, not Melania.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's just odd that way. But I've been real proud of Junior Dude because he has taken on this project as being he owns this. Like, he has the characters in Macbeth internalized and the characters in the White House internalized, and he's matched them up and he knows what he wants to say. And so we did this political cartoon of the three witches are Putin and Kellyanne Conway and Bannon. And then the cauldron has a TV on it with Hannity.
Uh-huh.
And here is Trump in front of these three witches, and they are promising him power.
Yeah.
And saying, no man of woman born shall defeat thee.
Uh-huh.
And there in the corner is Elizabeth Warren.
That's right.
Who's not a man of woman born.
That's right, baby. That's right. Didn't see that coming, did you? Yeah.
And so he's really got this down. And but we had to go through articles on the web, and it's kind of hard to find those that were written after the election. But we have found a few. And one of them was talking about, I think it was in the American Prospect, talking about how the Republican Party is Macduff. And it's worth Googling and trying to find, because the soullessness, the idea that we can compromise away our country, and because Macbeth will then have power and then we can go ahead and do whatever we want, is the point. And I've just been so impressed with how not just that, but this goes back to Saturday Night Live as well, and Daily Show, and Samantha Bee as well, that art and literature and coming up with creative ways to resist. I knew that would happen when Trump won the election. In the back of my mind, in the midst of my despair, I was thinking, these are going to be great years for satire and art.
Oh,
because
yeah.
That's where
they live.
That's where the resistance starts, and that's where the resistance is most effective. And you were not awake. You watched it the next morning. But when we watched Melissa McCarthy, Junior Dude and I, at first, it was so late in the show. And, there was already a host and a musical guest and so forth. And the show was toddling along. And all of a sudden, here is I said, is that Melissa McCarthy? It can't be Melissa McCarthy. She's not hosting. That's not her. And this is so good. And it's so... You know, the Sean Spicer is so dead on, and the makeup is perfect, and everything about it is just going. It's just the most amazing piece of comedy we've seen yet.
Yeah, it is.
But at the same time, I think a lot of us were sitting there going, this can't be the show. I mean, this can't be happening because she's not the host and that can't be her. And I think all of that rolled into why it became so viral.
It was so unexpected.
It was so unexpected.
And it was so, and I don't think anybody even hinted that it was coming.
No, they didn't. Yeah. It happened after Weekend Update and the show. It happened, like I said, just here's the skit. Okay, we're going to have Family Feud joke, and then we're going to have this, and it's going to be funny. Ha ha.
Think about this, Luca.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
Think about this. The White House, on a daily basis, leaks more profusely than the writer's room in Saturday Night Live.
Yep, that's right. That's right. And that's remarkable.
Yeah.
And the makeup room. And the makeup room.
Because the people and the White House are, it's also a sort of golden age of not whistleblowers, because these are people who signed up to work for the fascist president and his crazy people, but who are freaking out about what they're seeing and how completely batshit and unprepared and shoot from the hip and just lie and then shove your people out the door to cover your lie and move on to the next tweet.
Well, and knowing for a fact that the person at the top has no loyalty to you.
Right.
That's the part that makes the White House truly dysfunctional. And you and I have been in enough organizations and worked for enough people where that is the case, where, no, the boss isn't looking out for me. Right. I'm not part of his team. This isn't a team where I'm, you know, valued as a member of the Trump White House. I'm not valued here enough where if I somehow make a mistake, I'm not out on my ear tomorrow. Well, he knows the words "you're fired." I've heard him say them dozens of times.
And we're as divided as we were as a nation, as we were before the Civil War.
Yes, we are.
But there's a really important distinction between the nature of the division then and the nature of division now. If you were transported back in time to 1850, let's say, or you're transported back during the time of Lincoln-Douglas debates, we were a sharply divided nation over the over slavery. It's not about states' rights. Let's get that out of the way right away. The Civil War was about slavery and the expansion of slavery. And slaveholders and slave owners and the Southern states, the Confederacy, believed that the institution of slavery was a noble and Christian institution.
And that's more than anything. I really want – I'm not going to do Bible bitch this week,
right,
but mea culpa, believe me. Slavery was a Christian institution.
Absolutely.
It was biblically endorsed, and that's what it was about.
Yeah,
absolutely.
White male supremacy was God's plan.
God's plan.
And the more we enslave these people, and the more we use them as our labor, and the more we enrich ourselves on this earth, and the more we expand the institution of slavery, the more we are doing God's will.
Mm-hmm.
So you could take any Confederate true believer, any soldier, all the way up to, you know, because it was a fascist state. It was a bunch of rich landowners who used slave labor and murdered them to keep them in line to run their government. That's how the government ran.
Mm-hmm.
So you had this proto-fascist system in place. But you could find that people could explain what the war was about.
Mm-hmm.
And you could find that they didn't really change their opinion about slavery and what was dividing the country depending on what day of the week it was.
Right.
Or who was, you know, in office at the moment, or right, which way the wind was blowing. So if you ask someone, you know, what was the deal in the 1845, 1855, 1860, ask them, you know, 10 years after the war, what was it about? You'd find pretty much the same answer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one group of people believe this is a God-sanctioned thing that we need to expand. And it's infused with theological certainty and economic mm-hmm. necessity and cultural imperatives and da-da-da-da-da. But they all knew what the fucking deal was.
Right. And the other side felt equally endorsed by God to say slavery is a sin.
Slavery is a sin. Slavery is wrong. Slavery is bad. And there were, right, there were a bunch of Matthew Dowds in the middle going, can we have a Missouri Compromise of some
right,
kind?
Right, right.
So
right,
nothing new under the sun. The difference is now Republicans' core principles, the things that they will tell you, they will swear on the lives of their children, that they believe to be core principles, flip 180 degrees every few weeks.
Right.
They flip depending on who's in office, whether that person is Republican or Democrat, which way the wind is blowing, what Sean Hannity said today, what
yep.
Breitbart wrote today, what the president of the United States lied about today. They have absolutely no core principles at all. They don't believe, they don't care about deficits as long as the person in the White House is a Republican. They don't care about activist judges as long as those judges are appointing George W. Bush. They don't care about government overreach. They don't care.
They love Putin.
They love Putin. They hate Putin.
Yep.
You know, Barack Obama had tan suits and didn't love America, put his feet up. Donald Trump says that this country sucks and we're murderers and we're just as bad as Russia. Well, you know, he has a point.
He's right. He's got a point. Right. And all of a sudden, the Greenwaldites and the MAGA people are on the same side.
Suddenly like, wow, that's amazing. And and again, and also the both-siderists who want to say, Democrats, you know what? My Democratic Party, as deeply flawed as they are, stood up.
Yep.
They were too late to the party, and you know this is long overdue, but they stood up all night. They voted almost exactly party line votes. They did stand up this time around, and we need to give them credit for that and help them do more of it in the future.
Well, Joe Manchin and his deeply corrupt daughter do not count as Democrats anymore,
but,
and that's that.
But by and large, this idea that there's one rounding error like a Manchin or a Lieberman, and so it's bipartisan on both sides is nonsense.
Yeah, right. Bullshit.
The parties have sorted themselves out, and they stand for different things. So the core principles that Republicans are willing to die for, you can't get them to identify what they are.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
Well, I'd like to finish with two local headlines, if you don't mind.
Okay, go right ahead.
These are two totally true, absolutely true local headlines from our local state paper. This is the Illinois State Capitol's newspaper of record. Uh-huh. And I'm quoting you verbatim now.
Okay.
The second best one was Williamsville fighting goose poop problem at lake. That's the second best one. The best one was Springfield woman finally coaxes dog to come inside.
Yeah, and that was a rather large point headline. That was not a little side story. Springfield woman finally coaxes dog to come inside.
And you know what makes that one art? The word finally.
Finally.
Finally. Because it's obviously a long story.
It's a long story about a woman and her dog.
And so you know what? Your local newspaper has plenty of content on news that you can fill with letters to the editor.
If you don't think we're living next to a cornfield.
No.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitties are Polly and Missy. Polly is the Trump-colored cat that we know is not a Trump cat because of its decidedly large hands. It has multi-toed polydactyl hands and therefore is named Polly.
Oh.
He doesn't really fit into his bed but seems willing to make do. And Missy is the black cat who is also in her own bed and she has not been seen since they got that little cat bed for her. She is snug and warm inside her little bed, and you should go and look at them at our Facebook page and website. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local. You bet we do. We also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and mail addresses, snail mail we sometimes call it, but it's actually postal addresses. Both our PayPal and postal address information, complete with zip code, are there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please share our show on Facebook or Twitter, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties have warned us that if they see one more goddamn picture of Donald Trump in a goddamn bathrobe, Valentine's Day is over.
Valentine's Day is over. That's a great Billy Bragg song.
It is.
It is.
And Tom Waits. Oh, that's right. Tomorrow's Friday, so I got to figure out a Tom Waits song for
you. Got to find a Tom Waits song. And Driftglass, you and I met.
We did.
Face to face for the first time at a Shakespeare sister meetup.
We did.
I believe it was February 16th. And so that anniversary is coming up. It's been 9 years since you and I met face to face.
It is.
For the first time.
It's true.
And it was a Shakespeare sister meetup.
Uh-huh.
I was married but getting a divorce.
You were.
And you were this writer in a tweed coat who showed up late.
Uh-huh.
And you and I knew each other from our blog.
I sat next to you.
And you sat next to me and you didn't leave my side the whole night.
No.
And everybody stopped talking and listened to us talk to each other.
And then
I should have known then.
And then they said, you should have a podcast before there was such a thing. You should be on the radio. You two talk real good.
A lot of people said that. A lot of people, whenever we got together for meetups, and there were a few after that, but when we would get together for meetups, people would say, you two should be on the radio together because you guys have a real good rapport.
Yeah.
You know, I went, uh-huh.
You know, I think we'd sound excellent on Pod Save America. I'm just saying.
Up with them? They've got like this studio now.
Sure they do.
With Pod Save America wallpaper.
Yes, they do.
And
yeah.
We're just sitting here in the cornfield with our three cats.
The last interview Barack Obama ever did as president was their podcast. So,
oh my God.
You know, we are. I understand that we're punching a bit over our weight class. But let me put it this way.
That was a dig at our former president.
It is. One of the first interviews Congressman or State Senator Barack Obama ever did.
Yes.
On his way to greatness.
Yes.
Was with me.
That's true. You were part of the independent voters.
I was.
Forum.
And we vetted local politicians, and he was a local politician. So you know what? It'd make a nice bookend. I got some stories. Maybe I can tell you some interesting information about your former employer that you don't know about. Maybe I'll make shit up. I don't know. But I do know this. I can sit in front of a microphone and bullshit for 10 minutes, which is basically all your guests do anyway. And I know when to shut up so you can advertise your suits and your clothes and your ties and your this and that. Speaking of which, this week's show brought to you by MacGuffin's Muffins. MacGuffin's Muffins, building strong plot points 12 ways. And again, welcome our second sponsor, Dukakis Khakis. Dukakis Khakis, that line of sensible men's pants that was almost destroyed when Michael Dukakis was sued by George W. Bush, but they came back, and now they're wonderful, and they're called Dukakis Khakis.
They're the most sensible men's pants in the world.
They are. They're very sensible. And
we have a cat named Barack Hussein the Kenyan Usurper.
We do.
That we could talk about on Pod Save America.
Totally could. There's a lot
of things. I don't think we're ever going to be on Pod Save America.
No, that's never going to happen. But you know, we can make them
call us.
We can make them feel very guilty about not inviting us. First, we have to make them aware of our existence, which
of our existence.
So,
yeah,
you know, we're kind of Horton Hears a Who territory here. We are here. All right, baby, I love you.
I would want to say one more thing, which is, I don't mind not being on Pod Save America. I just don't ever want to hear finally a liberal podcast.
Oh, see now,
or you're finally a resistance podcast anymore. This is episode 375, people.
Yeah. And they're all just top rate. They're all top shelf, top quality. Yeah, I'm very proud of what we do. But now we're into Charlie Sykes territory, and that's a different conversation for a different day. Let's just put it this way. Brian Williams, I'm coming for you, man. I'm coming.
I liked what Shock said about Brian Williams. Every few weeks, I tune in to the 11th hour, and I always regret it.
Yeah. Anyway.
I love you. That's the other thing they don't say on Pod Save America.
Right.
Happy anniversary of meeting, and I love you very much 9 years later.
Never hear that on Pod Save America. You
8 years later. No, nine. 9 years later.
I was supposed to be in the new DeVos America, no math. So
this is all going in the show.
Yeah, I know. I love you, baby.
I love you. I love you, too. Thank you for everything.
Welcome. Thanks to all of the people who came home and have been very quiet and supportive, knowing that this is going to pay for the electricity that will keep them warm at night.
Exactly. And we'll And we love our listeners, too. Thank you for being here for us.
All right. Peace out.
Bye.
See you next time.
Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional F Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2017 Driftglass Boog Owl Podcast.